From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on July 19th, 2006, in Santa Monica, California. 350 people crowded into a hangar at the Santa Monica Airport. A company called Tesla was unveiling the first prototypes of a new kind of automobile. Later that year in November, the Tesla Roadster would be more formally debuted at the San Francisco International Auto Show, and 1 month later, Time Magazine featured Tesla as a recipient of the Best Inventions of the Year transportation category. But the public embrace of Tesla has been slower to happen. Sure, you see Teslas here and there. You know the name probably, but it's not a mainstream American product yet. Founder Elon Musk has been busy with many projects, but still wants to see Tesla more available in 50 states. But here's the rub. They want to do things their way, which brings us to last month, right here on Connections. Wilmerite's Dennis Wilmot said that he wants to see Tesla come to Rochester and maybe to Eastview Mall, which just happens to be losing its Sears store. Is Tesla a logical fit in that space, first for service and eventually for a dealership? Well, Wilmot suggested it's possible. And while he'd love to see it, the law currently is complicated. Tesla doesn't want to do business the same way as most automakers. And so Dennis Wilmot told our listeners, call your state lawmakers. Tell them to clear the path for Tesla. Well, it didn't take long for us to hear from the Rochester Automobile Dealers Association. And he said there's another side of the story, and they want the chance to tell it. So here we are, talking Tesla and its future in Western New York. And my guests include Brad McAreevy, who is the president of the Rochester Automobile Dealers Association. Brad, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Evan. Appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.
What did you drive here in?
I drove here in a Jeep Grand Cherokee.
A Jeep Grand Cherokee. Yeah. Okay. Where'd you get it?
One of the dealerships, I can't name.
Oh, yeah.
I run the Dealers Association, okay. Evan.
You did not drive a Tesla here.
One of the Chrysler dealers here in town. I did not drive a Tesla.
Well, one man who did is Roger Duby, who's the co-owner of the Tesla Club.
Co-founder.
Co-owner. My gosh. I'm giving you way too much credit.
Yes.
The co-founder of the Tesla Owners Club of New York State, which was founded when, Roger?
That was actually just founded in the past 2 months.
Okay. So, and you've talked on this program before about why you love Tesla. So you did drive here in a Tesla. When did you buy your first Tesla?
3 years ago.
Okay. And where did you buy your first?
I bought it online. They delivered it to my driveway.
Okay. That's pretty common as I understand it. So let's do this. Let's make sure we set the stage here to fully understand what's going on with Tesla and why we were caught off guard a little bit. You know, Dennis Wilmot is a lovely guy, and I always loved having a conversation with him. I had no idea he was going to bring up Tesla on this program, but here we were talking about the fact that the Sears store at Eastview Mall and other locations is vacating very, very soon, here within days now. And there's a question of what's going to go in that space. Now, it's also a question of who owns the space. And it's not like you can snap your fingers and get it done if you're Wilmerite, but they're going to look at a lot of options. I want to listen to what Dennis Wilmot did have to say. And it starts with me asking a question to him after he brought up Tesla and options. Tesla, how about Tesla to replace
Sears? So we have been in discussions with Tesla. Now, Tesla is waiting on some state approvals for dealer. I don't even know if they call them dealerships, but there are some legal hurdles that they still need to work through in order to open stores in upstate New York. They are looking in Rochester for, in essence, a service center. And I think Keith's assumptions on where in the market they're looking are fair. And I'll just leave it at that.
Is it not impossible that Tesla would locate at Eastview Mall?
It's not out of the realm of possibility, yes.
If that were to happen, we would know by when?
I don't think for another year, based on the where the legislation is, because they can't do anything till the state approves.
Till the state approves. And he went on to say that he wants to see it, that he's a fan of Tesla, and he wants people to call their lawmakers. And so Brad reached out to us. What did you make of what you just heard with Dennis Wilmot there?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I know Dennis, and Wilmerite is going to do what they need to do to help Eastview Mall. And first of all, and I think Wilmot does a terrific job, you know, with all the malls that they own here in town. So I have no issues whatsoever with the fact that they're looking to bring in a new tenant into their space. What most people don't understand is what the franchise laws are in New York State and 50 states around the country. Every state in the country has franchise laws that regulate the relationship between a manufacturer and their independent franchise dealer network. That relationship is very important. It needs to be regulated because of the impact that manufacturers can have on independently owned dealerships in the markets that they serve. And so that's the way the automobile business has operated for 80 to 100 years, and that relationship has evolved over that period of time. And Dennis is right. The legislation that is currently in place and the legislation that has been proposed by Tesla at this point in time, unfortunately, don't fit together.
Okay, so but what does that mean in terms of the way Tesla chooses to do what they do, Brad? What's your understanding for why the company does things that way?
I don't know what the motivation is for why they want to do it the way they're doing it, Evan, other than to say that Elon Musk, I think, prides himself on being a bit of a disruptor, and many times in a very positive way. Roger will talk about the technology of the vehicle. So on many levels, being a disruptor is a good thing. On this particular issue of how they choose to sell and service vehicles, we obviously feel that being a disruptor is not a better situation than what's out there today. The model that they're proposing and trying to utilize today is not a better model than what's in the market today, and particularly when it comes to consumer benefit.
Okay, so there's a couple of things. In fact, there's a lot of different things we want to cover this hour. But listeners, if you've got questions about the way the marketplace is currently set up, what we might see here, and if you want, I've got an email already, somebody asking me to compare the Tesla to the Volt. I can't do that, but Brad and maybe Roger can try. We'll try to do that. So there's a lot to kind of work through. But when you say it's better, better for the customer or better for your association, better for your dealers?
No, I will share with you as we talk today, I'll share you at least four reasons why the independent dealer franchise system model is better for consumers than a model that's where the manufacturer owns their retail
like
network.
Tesla.
Correct.
Okay.
And it would apply to any manufacturer that tried to own their retail network. Tesla happens to be the one in the market today that's trying to utilize this model, but it would apply to any manufacturer.
Have we seen other companies besides Tesla do it this way?
No. And, Tesla is obviously trying it. They're having some success in some areas.
In other states?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, because every state has its own set of franchise laws. So Tesla has gone to 50 states around the country and attempted to introduce their model into each state.
What is your understanding of how receptive New York lawmakers have been on this?
I would say modestly. Tesla does operate 5 sales locations in downstate New York and 1 service center. I think that's correct, Roger.
That's correct.
So the New York State Legislature was open to the idea of giving them an opportunity to get started. But those discussions, when they took place 5-6 years ago, back in 2012, 2013, it was agreed that they would be given an opportunity to get started. But once they started to grow and reach some size, that it would then dovetail into the franchise system.
So I want you to hit your 4 points on why you think it's better for consumers. And then I'll read some criticism in the marketplace, and you can tell us what you think here. But what are the 4 reasons that stand out to you?
Well, this will take a couple of minutes.
That's okay. Why I wanted you in here. We're not doing a 10-second soundbite. People need to understand this, because I think it was when Dennis Wilmot brought this up, I have to say, Brett, again, we didn't expect to talk Tesla that day. We thought we were talking about a wide range of things. But our audience was going, oh, well, that makes sense to us. Mm-hmm. Of course, if Cirrus is going to be gone, put it there. That seems cool. And then they would say, well, the law says you can't. Why? So, I mean, I think for people who are not on the inside baseball of this, it does matter to understand why the law is what it is and why you think the law ought to stay. You think the law ought to stay, right?
Correct.
Okay. So yeah. What take us through your reasons then.
Yeah. So there's 4 reasons. And I'll start with 2 reasons that are basically on what I'll call the front end of the transaction. This is the buying and selling of vehicles. When a manufacturer, well, first, let me start with the franchise system. The way the franchise system works, and this is the way the car business has run forever, an automaker produces a vehicle. They price it in such a way that there's a margin in the suggested retail price of the vehicle. So every new car comes with what's called the Monroney label. It's that sticker you see on the side of the car. It has a suggested retail price of the vehicle. Embedded in there is a margin for the dealer that represents their profit for handling the sale of that vehicle. Dealers, as franchised owners, have the discretion to negotiate whatever sales price they want. Customer can go in there. They can look at the sticker. I don't know, Evan, how many new cars have you purchased?
Well, 10 years ago. I'd like to not buy another one for a while.
Okay, but the chances are you may not have paid the full sticker price.
I did not.
Okay, so you might have shopped around a little bit and found yourself a good deal.
I found that they don't really like when I leave the lot, too. That was interesting. But anyway,
it's part of
ahead.
A negotiating
tactic. Yeah, sure.
Okay. But what the franchise system allows for is consumers to shop. It allows them to go from a dealer to dealer. It allows them to shop other brands. And the dealer has the discretion to negotiate with that customer and lower that price in order to capture that customer's business. In the direct-to-consumer world, where the manufacturer owns their retail network, there's no negotiating. The price is the price. You pay the price or you don't get the car. So as a consumer, you have no opportunity to shop for the vehicle through competing dealers in the market. So people will generally say competition is a good thing for consumers.
All right, so that's point one,
okay.
Why that's better for consumers, right?
Right.
All right, so my pushback to you is it is very stressful to have to negotiate car prices, and seeing one price and one price only might be a lot less stressful and easier to understand.
And there are dealers in the market that sell that way,
okay.
Evan.
Okay.
Okay, so there are plenty of dealers in the market that do what's called one-price selling. We have dealers here in Rochester. They focus on the customer experience. They want to take the negotiation out of the equation.
Sure.
And so they say to the consumer, hey, come to us. We'll sell you the car at this predetermined price, and we're just going to wow you with our service.
And that's their discretion to do it that way.
Absolutely their discretion.
Okay.
And they have the discretion to set the price on the vehicle. And just so you know, they adjust those prices when they need to. They're not selling them for full sticker, which is the case today.
Okay.
With Tesla.
Okay.
So full sticker on every car. No opportunity to shop. Consumer has to buy for the full price. The other end of that equation, most people trade a car in when they buy a new car. They have a car to trade in. Tesla today is not in the used car business. They don't take trade-ins. They don't sell used cars. They sell new Teslas. That's what they do. So if you want to buy a new Tesla today, you either have to sell your own car privately, which you can do. Not many people do. They like the convenience of trading it in. Or Tesla will take your car in, and they'll put it on a website, and they'll wholesale the car to a group of buyers that are willing to pay wholesale. Why is that important? A dealer, when he takes cars in on trade, they will look to take the car in for the purposes of reconditioning and selling it retail, or they will look to wholesale the car. Two scenarios. What am I going to do with this customer's trade? Take it in and retail it, or sell it to the wholesale market? When you take a car in at trade-in with the intention of retailing it, you give the customer a greater allowance for their car because I'm going to retail that car. I have a margin to work with, okay? I'm willing to give the customer a greater allowance for their vehicle. When you wholesale a car, you're selling it to the wholesale market. You're selling it at the lowest market price that car is going to bring in the wholesale world. As a consumer, that differential can be anywhere from $500 on some vehicles to as high as $1,500 on some high-end luxury vehicles. So where you as the dealer go with my car affects me as a buyer. So take those two scenarios and put them together. Pay the maximum for the car I'm buying and get the lowest value in the market for my trade. I refer to that sometimes as the Tesla tax. That's the tax for buying. And again, I'm using Tesla today as the example because they're the only one in the market. But this scenario would hold true for any manufacturer looking to own their retail network, and why the independent franchise dealer model, which is what is predominantly in the market today, dealers have the flexibility to make sales. They have the flexibility coming off of a sale price on a new car. They have the flexibility of over-allowing on a used car trade-in. That works for consumers.
Okay. How many points have we gotten through?
That's two.
What's three? And Roger Doobie here is here not to speak for Tesla, but to speak as a Tesla owner. So we'll get to some of his feedback later, but let's go through the points here. Number three.
Number three is warranty and recall. Okay. We've seen a lot of this, by the way, in the last couple of years. There's been a tremendous amount of recall activity in the market in the last 4 or 5 years. And warranty is a normal day-to-day scenario for manufacturers. Customers who have vehicles that's covered under warranty for some initial period of time, 3 years, 50,000 miles. A manufacturer who has a warranty on a vehicle, if a customer exercises that warranty, that's an expense to the manufacturer. The manufacturer is backing up their product. They will honor it, but it's costing them money.
Warranties cost auto dealers money?
No, manufacturers.
Manufacturers' money?
Right. Any manufacturer puts a product out in the market who's covered under warranty, that's coming out of their pocket.
Okay.
Okay. A dealer, an independent franchise dealer, is your advocate when it comes to warranty. They're your advocate, and here's why that scenario works. In the warranty world, there's kind of three spaces. There's the repair that's obviously covered under warranty. You know, if you just bought a car 6 months ago and have 5,000 miles on it and it has something go wrong with it, it's obviously covered. There's the other end of the spectrum where it's obviously not covered. If you've owned your car for 10 years and it has 150,000 miles on it, it's out of warranty.
176.
There's a large space in the middle.
Okay.
Okay. Is it covered or isn't it covered? So if the warranty's 3 years and 50,000 miles and your car has 51,000 miles on it, is it covered? Or is it 3 years and 3 months? Is it covered? Is the part that failed, did it fail because of the failure of some other part? So there's a lot of gray area in warranty, a lot of gray area. You got a manufacturer who doesn't want to pay unless they have an obligation to, and you have a dealer who is holding that manufacturer accountable for that warranty work for the benefit of the consumer. So in the case of a consumer, now imagine if you're a consumer and you're calling a 1-800 number of a manufacturer arguing that you want your warranty claim covered. You're trying to deal with a manufacturer through a 1-800 number, or you have a dealer, an independent dealer representing your interest, who's dealing with the people at the manufacturer that they deal with every single day, who's saying, wait a minute, you're saying you don't want to cover this, but here's why you should, or at least partially covered it. The dealer advocates.
And you're saying that they're going to do that advocacy work because they want to keep your business.
They do it every day, Evan.
They want to keep your business.
Well, not only that, but the dealer selfishly is compensated for warranty work.
Okay.
When the dealer brings the car into their shop and completes warranty work, the manufacturer pays the dealer.
So you're saying it's good for the dealer, but it's also good for the customer.
Absolutely.
All right. What's point four?
Point four is in the unlikely event that a manufacturer leaves the market, okay, leaves the market. We've had plenty of franchises, plenty of automakers leave the market. I mean, I can name five of them right now. Pontiac, Oldsmobile, Saab, Kia, not Kia, I'm sorry, Daewoo. There's been a number of them. They were around for a long time, and now they're not. When an independent franchise dealer represents that brand, many times that dealer stays in the market. They either have other franchises they represent, or they have found a way to get by another franchise. They stay in the market. When we had the bankruptcies in 2009, 2010, we lost one dealer in this market. Just one. Okay? The dealers in this market, in Rochester, New York, have long histories in the car business. Second, third, fourth generation. They've been here 70, 80 years. They find a way to stay in business. That's good for the consumer. If the manufacturer, and I guess I'll go to Dennis's point, Sears is going bankrupt. What does that mean for Wilmorite? They lose the Sears building as a tenant. Sears, the parent company, goes bankrupt. Sears, every retail location that they have, gone. In the car business, that's not how it works. If a manufacturer leaves the market, the independent franchise dealer oftentimes stays in the market, provides the customer with ongoing service for their vehicle, even though the manufacturer is gone. Tesla's situation today, and Roger will be able to speak to this, it's quite a story. It's very up and down. There's as many people that are bear market versus bull market sellers. It's one of the most shorted stocks in the market. It's gone through some very tough financial times, and yet most recently, this quarter, they posted a profit for the first time in quite a while. So it's a very up-and-down situation. They've endured a lot.
And you're saying without the franchise model, if things go south for Tesla, there's no recourse for people who own them locally.
Every retail location that they open right now will go along with them.
So those are the four points.
Those are the four.
Brad McAreevy is the president of the Rochester Automobile Dealers Association, making the case for why the law ought to stay the same, which is that if you want to have a dealership, you want to sell cars here in Western New York, you got to have a franchise model. You have to do it via a franchise.
Because of the protection the consumer is afforded under the franchise model. That's why the model works.
Let me ask you to respond to one piece that I read taking up the Tesla case, and then we'll see what Roger Duby has to say, if he's mm-hmm. persuaded here. Steve Hanley wrote a piece for Clean Technica this past February, and he had this to say. He writes, quote, "Thanks in large part to dealer franchise laws, franchise dealers have grown more powerful than the companies that build the cars. In a way, it's fairly ridiculous. Home Depot doesn't need a license from the state to sell building materials. Apple doesn't need a license to sell computer products. Joe Sixpack can open a shoe store if he thinks it makes good business sense to do so without asking permission from any franchising board. But selling automobiles? Not allowed. You need a franchise license for that. And as much as the dealer associations paint themselves as Sir Galahads bringing untold benefits to the community, dealer franchise laws are really as anti-competitive as you can get. They protect those who hold licenses and keep other competitors from getting started in business." End quote. Go ahead, Brad. What do you make of that?
Well, I find that pretty interesting, actually. The franchise laws that exist in every state in this country exist for good reason. The automakers are large, very large companies, and the independent franchise dealers are small business owners.
So they're not more powerful than the automakers.
Well, his argument is that collectively they're more powerful.
Yeah.
And I would argue, and just so you know, I'm in the business of legislating the relationship.
Yep.
I lobby on behalf of the dealers with my peers here in New York State, and we lobby to make sure that the franchise laws brings balance to the relationship. The manufacturers are very powerful. They have an association too, by the way. The manufacturers collectively come together as a group. So picture a group of manufacturers worldwide coming together as a group against a group of dealers coming together as a group and figuring out how to balance that relationship.
But is it different than, he mentioned Home Depot, Apple. Is it different?
The only thing that I would say about that is those are very likely, I assume, they're factory-owned outlets.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Buying a car is not a hard thing to do. When you buy a car, you can walk into any dealer anywhere and buy it in a day. Owning a car through the life cycle of being a car owner, that requires support and structure. So if you buy a car, at some point you're going to want to trade it in. Well, let's back up. At some point you might need service. At some point you might need collision repair. At some point you might need warranty. At some point you might want to trade it in. At some point you're going to want to have somebody there who's willing to take it in on trade and do all those things for you. So buying an iPhone, buying something at Home Depot, that's a singular purchase that is not likely to have a 10 or 15-year life to
so
it.
So not apples to apples.
Not apples
in
to
your
apples
view
at
there.
All.
Okay,
yeah.
And is it anti-competitive to say, look, the law is protecting us doing it this way, that Tesla's going to be barred?
I would disagree with that. And the reason I say is because Tesla right now doesn't want competition to allow to sell their brand. They want to control the sale of the vehicle, and they want to price it at the price that they want to sell it at. Franchised independent new car dealers, they compete against each other every single day. They compete. These guys all have been around for a long time. They'll compete for a $100 deal, meaning the
you mean $100 margin
yeah.
that they keep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So to say that the current system is not competitive, it just says you don't understand the system.
Okay. Well, but one other point that he makes here, because as you look at the margin, if you missed it earlier, Brad McAreevy explained that if I own a franchise, you know, and let's say the sticker price, and somebody comes in and pays a full sticker, and it's $25K. I'm not making $25K. Maybe I'm making $1,000?
Maybe.
Okay. $800?
Maybe. The new car business
margins? Is there an average?
Okay. I'll give you a number because people ask me this all the time. The car business, these guys are making fortunes. Okay?
What's the average on the margin? Yeah.
What do you think the net earnings on a car deal is based on sales numbers? Okay. So if I sell you a car for $10,000,
yeah.
What do you think I'm making?
I'm going to guess $500.
Okay. 1.5%. That's my margin. 1.5%. So a dealer works pretty hard, both on sales, service, parts, et cetera, to make 1.5% margin before tax on the deal.
That's the average.
That's the average.
Okay, so here's the point that the same writer, Steve Hanley, writing for Clean Technica, says the following. He says, Tesla prefers to sell its cars online and at company-owned stores where highly trained representatives educate members of the public about driving an electric car. Tesla is well aware of the stories about dealers who refuse to take electric cars seriously. They hide them out in the back lot. If a customer comes in to ask about one, the sales staff are told to switch them to a conventional car with an internal combustion engine, one that will need lots of maintenance and repairs over the years. For many dealers, the profit is not in that margin. It's in the service department, not the sales floor. Selling cars that won't spend any time in the shop is a losing proposition for them, end quote.
dealerships have a number of different departments that they operate. Sales, service, parts, collision, et cetera, et cetera.
But is the money in the service department?
There is money that's made in the service department, no question about it. But to suggest that a salesperson would tell a customer, hey, look, you don't want that car, you want this car. Salespeople and dealerships sell customers the cars they want, the ones they want. If a customer walks into a dealership today and says, I want to buy an electric car, the salesman will take him over and show them electric vehicles.
So you think these boogeyman stories are bogus?
The car business is a big business. Could I find a salesperson?
Sure. But you're saying that's not the average.
I'm saying that is not the norm.
Okay.
Salespeople and dealerships sell consumers the cars they want. And the situation today, Evan, electric car business is in its infancy. Despite the amount of money that's being spent, it's in its infancy. On a national basis, pure electric cars, taking out the plug-in hybrids, out of the equation and so forth, the percent of pure electric vehicles that will be sold against the total number of new cars in the market today, about 1.5%.
I was going to say about 1%.
1.5%. So that's growing, by the way.
Yeah,
it's a growing number, which is a good thing. It's growing, but that's your market today. And I don't believe that dealers in general push customers away from buying an electric or a plug-in hybrid vehicle in favor of buying, because they want to make money for the service department.
All right, so what I want to ask Brad to do is tell us what he would say to a lawmaker. If a state legislator came to your office tomorrow, and then I'll get Roger Doobie's response to this as the co-founder of the Tesla Owners Club of New York State, and then we'll take some of your phone calls and emails, because I have some of those piling up here. But if a state senator, if state lawmakers call you tomorrow and said, look, I'm hearing from Tesla. I know other states are kind of changing the way they do things. Should we change the law? Should we do it their way? What's the short elevator pitch you give to them?
Well, that's been going on for 2 years
now. So you've had many of those conversations.
Oh, I have that conversation every session, and I have it often. I point out to the lawmakers exactly what this is. Unfortunately, they understand that. This law has been around New York State for almost 20 years. So fortunately, they understand the consumer aspect of it. And I think as lawmakers, That's what rings true to them.
But consumer. Do you think they are feeling pressure from Tesla? And do you feel that pressure is going to work?
Tesla, that's their job, is to try to pressure them doing something differently. No, I don't think. We've successfully blocked that legislation 2 years in a row now. And I think that the lawmakers see the value of the independent franchise system. And I think what they are looking to do is to suggest to Tesla, hey, look, instead of trying to be the disruptor on every level of the car business, perhaps they should focus on being a good auto manufacturer and let the dealer system, the independent franchise dealers, help them succeed. Help them succeed. If they want to transfer all that cost onto the dealer network, because dealers are all independent business owners, they can transfer all that cost to the dealer. The dealer will represent their brand, do a great job selling the car, and they can just go be a great automaker. Create great technology and really advance the electric vehicle industry forward, and just focus on that. Let the people that do the selling and the servicing do what they do.
All right, Roger. So you've heard some of the arguments, the 4 points, et cetera. And I wonder what you make of it as a Tesla owner and as someone who helped co-found the Tesla Owners Club of New York State.
So my personal experience and the experience of a lot of my friends who either have electric cars or have been shopping for electric cars is pretty different than the picture that's being painted. And so I'd sort of like to start there. Point number one, when I shop for a car, I am going to look at a variety of different manufacturers, a variety of different products, look at the advantages and disadvantages of each of them, and make my decision based on how well the car fits what I want. That's my basic algorithm for finding a car. What problem am I trying to solve, and what options are out there? And that's pretty much the way that my friends approach the same problem. When they decide, gee, I really want an electric car for whatever reason, they enjoy the feeling of driving the car, they are particularly dedicated to environmental issues, or whatever happens to be their particular element that draws them to an electric car, that's a factor that they have to take into account.
Okay.
From the point of view of Tesla in particular, they have, as a business, taken the strategy of we're going to develop, manufacture, and sell high-end cars first. So we end up with very high price point cars, and they have a well-defined and somewhat narrow market because the price is so high. This is not a consumer. Their strategy was not focused toward the broad consumer initially. It was more of a trickle-down kind of thing.
Yep.
The experience basically was pretty direct. I looked at the Tesla, saw what it offered. The particular problem I was trying to solve was range and ability of the car to allow me to travel. And so the hidden factor in the travel part is charging time. And so that was a very significant factor for me. Charging time of hours is clearly impractical in my mind. So anything that offers something like that is a non-starter right away. I want range. I wanted range of 300 miles, something comparable to a conventional internal combustion engine car. And I wanted the ability to be able to charge in a time frame that was tens of minutes, not hours. So those are the two factors I was looking for when I took a closer look at an electric car. And at that point, and I think in many cases still today, Tesla is the only player in that because they have a nationwide, actually they have an international network of superchargers. Supercharger allows me to charge my car from nearly zero, so let's say 30 miles of range. My car has a capacity of 300 miles. I can charge for 20 minutes. That allows me to go to the bathroom, get a sandwich, come back to the car. I can charge for 20 minutes and be back up to 250, 280 miles. So I'm really ready to go for another 5 hours of sitting in the car. And that's pretty much the biological limit that I have. I just can't drive for much longer than I get tired. Or I have to go somewhere. So that's the quantum that I'm looking at. I'm looking at how far can I travel and how long is it going to take me to charge once I'm stopped to recharge. And so that eliminates a whole class of electric cars that have short range or have very long charge times, or they're missing that superstructure below it, which is this network of superchargers. Tesla also provides free supercharging for life, and so I never have to worry about paying for charging.
We're getting a little far afield here, but what does a supercharger look like?
A supercharger looks, how would you describe what it looks like? There's an array of superchargers at Eastview Mall. They're over near Bonefish Grill up in the parking lot. They look like
a parking meter.
6 foot tall. Get on that mic, Brad, if you want to jump back, just to add to it.
That's about right.
Yeah, it's 6 feet tall. It looks like a parking meter.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. It's hollowed out in the middle and has a cable, and you plug it into the car just as if you were plugging a gasoline nozzle into the car. So it feels very much like a conventional fill-up. The supercharging for life is a nice feature. So when we first got our first Tesla 3 years ago, and in pretty short order, we decided, well, let's take it for a trip. So we figured, well, let's go to the Black Hills of South Dakota. Had never been there, wanted to see Mount Rushmore. We went ahead and did that, and it was a marvelous experience, and it still continues to be a marvelous experience. The supercharging network is built into the car, so the car will tell you you're going to have to spend 15 minutes at this supercharger, you're going to have to spend 20 minutes at that one, and this is when you're going to arrive at your final destination.
All of those things are fitting what you wanted, but how does any of what you heard from Brad maybe offer some dissonance for you? Number one, did you trade a car in?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Okay.
So a couple of things. Number one, I traded a car in initially because I couldn't afford a Tesla by itself. So I traded in to Tesla my car. They have an arrangement with CarMax, and so, boom, that's gone off their books as well. However, 2.5 years later, when we wanted to upgrade from the Model S to the Model X, I contacted Tesla again, and they said, you have two options. This is the price that we will offer you to buy your car from you, Or you can go to CarMax and get an independent assessment and take whichever offer you prefer. Turns out the Tesla offer was higher. They came and took the car and delivered my new car in one move. And the previous car was back on the market as certified pre-owned by Tesla on their website within a matter of a couple of months.
So did you feel like it was fair? Did you feel like you got a good number for that?
Oh, yeah, I did. Tesla holds its value quite well. And
the one that you're trading in, though, did you get good,
yes,
good value for
yes,
that?
Yes. Again, I feel that, you know, the independent assessment by CarMax is kind of a sanity check on that. They're not just giving me a number. If CarMax came back and said, whoa, we want to give you X and it's a lot higher than what Tesla would offer, I would take that. I don't have any particular need to sell it back to Tesla particularly. So they were very competitive that way. And the CarMax assessor told me in no uncertain terms, I don't talk to Tesla. I'm just sort of curious to see what they finally offer you.
Okay. The price you got.
The price that I got.
Does that surprise you at all, Brad McAreevy?
The car business obviously has a lot of moving parts to it. Roger felt comfortable with what he got, and that's what matters. He felt comfortable with the transaction that took place. That's what's important. But I can tell you from an industry standpoint, the broad industry, a dealer taking a car in on trade for his own intent to resell the car will result in a higher trade-in value to the customer than a car being wholesaled. That's the rule of thumb in the industry, and everybody in the industry knows that.
Okay. You accept that, Roger?
Yeah, sure. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, so I wanted to talk a little bit about servicing because that really ties into ultimately what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
With Eastview Mall. So I have a 4-year bumper-to-bumper service warranty on the car. Everything is covered. Once a year, I have to have the car serviced by Tesla. What happens is if there's any sort of failure, there's an 800 number to call. They get on the line immediately and they decide what action they're going to take. They have a network of rangers who are positioned in strategic locations around the country in addition to their service centers.
They call them rangers?
They call them rangers.
Okay, and where's the local closest one to you?
Buffalo.
Okay.
And so in the event that it's a simple fix, they will send a ranger out to wherever you are in the middle of nowhere, if you're down on Cuca Lake or something.
So you don't have to go to Buffalo?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the
okay.
ranger, by definition, comes to me. He'll come to me. He'll do the repair. In the event that he or she can't do the repair, then what happens is the nearest service center will put a loaner Tesla on a flatbed, drive it out to wherever I am, swap the cars out, and I've got a loaner until they can fix the thing.
Okay.
So let me talk a bit about that service factor, though.
Okay, then I want to talk to Brad, because Brad's got a strange smirk on his face, but I don't know what it's about. We'll get to that in a second.
So again, I'm looking at this from the point of view of the user experience. I have had my car serviced by both the Cleveland and the Pittsburgh service centers for Tesla. It's been the same every single time. They show up with a loaner car on a flatbed. They swap them out. They take my car away. Comes back a week later. Everything's taken care of. Swap out. Done. No charge to me at all, except in the purchase price, which, you know, I'm sure that's tucked away there somewhere.
Yeah.
The thing that got me interested in a local service center, though, is that the jobs associated with the service centers in Cleveland and Pittsburgh are located out of state. New York State gets zero income for those jobs. It does not have those jobs for its population, and it loses the tax revenue that might come from whatever is happening in that service.
So it's not necessarily even about convenience for you.
Well, the convenience, I mean, Tesla takes care of the convenience. Frankly, I would be thrilled if they had one locally, because then I could just drop the car off and get a loaner
right.
and go.
Gotcha.
It just seems expensive and inefficient.
Okay,
for
but
them
you're not
to
driving
to
Pittsburgh
swap.
Yourself.
I am
you're,
not.
You don't have to get the.
I don't have the time to go do that.
Okay. Right. So, but for those who might have been confused about that. Okay, so that's how that's working for you. But you're saying if the law changes, opens things up a little bit for Tesla, you could see. Not only would it be even a little bit more convenient, you drive to Eastview yourself or wherever the case may be. Because Dennis Wilmot was kind enough to come on this program. Nothing is imminent there. I'm sure they'd love to see it, but please don't take that away from this program. Tesla is not coming to Eastview right now, even though Wilmorite would probably like that. A lot would have to happen. But you're saying you'd see more jobs there, et cetera. Brad, you had a little bit of a smirk on your face. What's going on over there?
Well, that is, I think, one of the benefits of what Tesla has going for itself because it's such a new and relatively small niche car company. So what Roger has the benefit of today is being an owner of a vehicle that maybe makes 100,000 cars a year. Imagine if you're making millions, okay? You have millions of owners in the market. So you look at all the other manufacturers who have been in this business for decades. They have millions of owners in the market. You think it makes sense for a mobile technician to come out and service millions of people? That's not happening. The way Tesla is today, and again, I don't want anybody to get the idea that auto dealers are against Tesla. We are 100% for it. We believe that the auto dealers, the franchise independent system, could help Tesla succeed. Having a facility in a market to service those vehicles and take care of customers is a good thing. But there will come a time, if Tesla continues to be an automaker and continues to grow, where that level of service to be able to go out and individually do those types of things will become unreasonable. It won't be something that can be done. And Roger might be able to say or otherwise, but the last article I read, the current wait time for a customer to get their car into a Tesla service center is over 30 days. So imagine if you needed some more significant repair other than something the mobile repair unit could do, and you had to wait 30 days to get your car in for service. That's an example of where the size of the company and the size of their current structure in the marketplace are out of sync with one another. And they could correct that very easily. Tesla could come to Rochester today, award a franchise to a dealer, put a sign up on a building, have a permanent place of business, have sales, service, equipment, trained technicians, body shop, everything. Interestingly, Tesla's collision center, Roger, you can tell me if this is true or not, they assign their collision repair work to Service King here in town, the old Gates Automotive. They're the authorized collision repair center of Tesla. So Tesla is willing to let a third party do the collision repair on your car, but they won't let a franchise dealer sell or service your car. I struggle with that.
Okay. Quick addition from Roger, and then we got to take a couple of phone calls here. Go ahead.
So the longest time I've ever had to wait to get my car picked up has been 3 days. I've never experienced a 30-day wait, any sort of delay. I've never been told, gee, we're not going to be able to see you until next month. 3 days is the longest wait I've ever had.
To get it picked up, Roger?
To get it picked up.
How long did it take you to get it back?
A week.
Okay. So in total, 10 days?
No.
I mean 3 days to pick it up and...
Yeah. So in total, we're looking at 8 days.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Yep. That's from pickup time until my car is returned.
Okay.
Yep. And that's been the case every time my car has been serviced. Either of my cars have been serviced for the last 3 years. I've never had the other experience.
Okay. Let's get some phone calls. And I think Keith has been waiting the longest. Go ahead, Keith.
A couple questions. Brad, have you ever heard the phrase back of the house?
The back of the house.
I hear that in restaurants more often, but
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, go ahead, Keith.
I had a car dealer owner tell me that the front of the house sells the cars, but the back of the house makes the money, meaning the repair center. I could see what would happen if Tesla wanted to start awarding franchises. So let's say you had two dealers in the Rochester area, one on the east side, one on the west side. You go in there, you would start to see them being sold at a premium price. You would start to see add-ons of etched windshields, of mud flaps, of paint sealant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then if it's a popular vehicle, as history pointed out, you would see there would be no bargaining, or if there was, they would bargain the car down, but give you nothing for your car on a trade. So I personally like the Tesla model because if it's successful, it may change the way the whole industry works. Now, one thing Tesla had, they have a vehicle, and I've seen them, sat in them, played with them, never driven one, that has less maintenance to it because it's an electric car. Mm-hmm. My personal concern isn't the price, because in the mid-40s, I mean, you can go to any Mercedes-Benz dealer or even Chevy and see the same similar price, is the range with the battery. I'm still not 100% sold on that, especially in the wintertime, because we all know how cold weather affects the battery. Mm-hmm. But I don't have a problem with their business model, okay. And I don't think the state should interfere with it. If it doesn't work, let the market decide it doesn't work, not the politicians.
Okay. Keith, thank you. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, Keith, I think the rule of thumb you're looking for as far as where money gets made in a car dealership, the rule of thumb is sales sells the first car and service sells every car after. And what that means is the customer is taken care of in the service department and the service department earns repeat business. In the car business, every department is expected to make money. The service department, the parts department, the new car department, the used car department, that's what allows the dealership to be successful. One of the concerns with Tesla's model is they don't have all the departments. They don't have a used car department. They've sublet the collision repair out to an outside party. They have some service centers and they have a sales outlet. They're not functioning the same way a regular traditional dealer does. Therefore, their opportunity to be successful as a standalone operation is going to be very difficult. They would be much better served working with a dealer who's a multi-franchise representative who can take their franchise into their building, market it, service it, take care of it, but do it under the umbrella of a multi-franchise system. That would be the better way to go. As far as your comments about the car itself, Keith, I don't really have any objection to that. I mean, it's a great car. It's got great technology. It's done a lot to move the industry forward. And even though you might not agree with my points about why the franchise system benefits consumers, I can only tell you, as a person who's been in the car business 35 years, these things matter. They matter to people who want to come in and buy a car, trade their car in, need it serviced, covered under warranty, and have a place to go in the event the manufacturer goes. I've seen it happen.
I got to keep it tight. One more phone call. David in Pittsburgh, you got to keep it as tight as you can. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I had a minor accident with my car, and I broke the charging connector. I really wanted to get that done quickly, and the mobile service people couldn't do it. So I called the service facility, and they were able to see me the next day. No wait. Just as soon as I could get there, they were ready to take care of me. After I bought the car and I had a warning light I bought mine used, that the 12-volt battery was bad and that required a service from a service facility. They arranged for me to stop at a service facility on my way home because I bought the car in Florida. And so I stopped there. They had nice coffee. They had no delays. And they have, for people who need to get their car serviced immediately, there's no 30-day wait. There's no 30-hour wait. There's maybe a 30-minute wait. The other thing is, it talks about this thing being a niche car. Tesla cars were third in sales in the United States. They exceeded Mercedes, BMW, Cadillac, Jaguar. Hardly a niche car. I don't think, I appreciate how he is so sympathetic about the needs of the Tesla company, but if people don't want to buy a Tesla because they can't trade their car in, so be it. He doesn't have to worry about that. Let the market deal with it.
All right, so David, I got to jump in here. First of all, I'm not everyone to argue with numbers, But Tesla does it. It's still a niche, isn't it, Roger? Is it not?
So in the
I don't see Teslas anywhere besides yours.
Really? There are over 200 of them in Rochester alone.
200 cars is not a big number in Rochester.
Fine. There are 9,000 registered Tesla owners in New York State, and there are 12,000 reservation holders in New York State.
Okay. So it's growing.
It's growing.
No doubt about that.
Point number two.
Do it tight. Go ahead.
In the third quarter of 2018,
yeah,
Tesla outsold Audi, Acura, and Infiniti.
Okay.
It's moving up.
All right, so to David,
and it's disturbing.
I appreciate that point, but let me finish, because I can't believe how fast this hour's gone. Let me finish with Brad on a salient, important point here. David is saying, let the market decide. If your concern is for the consumers, and you think they're the ones who are going to get a bad deal here, if Tesla continues to grow and can't keep doing it the same way a chef who spends all day gathering mushrooms in the backyard to make one dish couldn't do it for 1,000 people, if you're worried they can't keep doing it that well level if they grow, won't the market decide that if they start screwing it up? Won't they have to change if you're right?
Yeah, you know, Evan, I mean, we all, as people that believe in capitalism, would like to think that the market will dictate the outcome. But the reality of it is government, both at the state, federal, local, county, whatever level you want, intercedes into the market for the good of consumers. That's what they do. Government is there for the benefit of the community that they serve.
And this is about protecting consumers.
This model, the model of the franchise dealer system, is proven to be the best model to serve consumers, hands down. If it wasn't the best model, it would have gone away years ago. It's been this way for 100-some years. Now, I know some people are going to say, oh, well, we should just get rid of it. It's there for a reason.
As we wrap the program, then, one more important point. Let's say it again. If Tesla does want to come here under the current rules, they still can. They'd
absolutely
have to play by the franchise
Evan,
rules.
They could assign a franchise and be in business tomorrow.
Do you want them to do that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We would love to have them. I got a bunch of dealers that would take it right now.
Roger, do you want them to do that?
I am fixated on getting them here with a service center for jobs, for accessibility, and for a connection to the West Coast high-tech industry. That would be fantastic.
One way or another, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
We agree with that 100%, Roger.
Well, I want to thank both of you. Roger Doobie, thank you for being here, the co-founder of the Tesla Owners Club of New York State. Nice having you here. Thank you, Roger. And Brad McAreevy, the president of the Rochester Automobile Dealers Association. Always nice to see you. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Evan.
All right, short break, more connections coming up.